welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rezac. This is the show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. Hope you're all doing well. As a podcaster, I do my best to shed light on what is in the shadows. I don't think of myself as a citizen journalist per se, not quite anyways. However, I do believe one of my strengths is asking the difficult questions, offering up a different perspective, hopefully shedding the light of truth on the issues that have been presented to us deceitfully. I do my best to pick the issues that are most concerning to me as a parent, an American, and just an ordinary human in the midst of this strange war on this beautiful planet that we share. My goal is always to help humanity in any way that I can. Every once in a while, a book arrives on the scene that shakes the ground that we walk on. This book, Turtles All the Way Down, Vaccine Science and Myth, is exactly this kind of book. Written anonymously with unassailable science and data taken from the very sources that mainstream medicine uses, the CDC, the FDA, the World Health Organization, and peer-reviewed medical journals, Turtles is a tour de force that will arm parents and physicians, if they're courageous enough, with the truth about this vitally important issue that impacts our children and future generations on this planet. Here is a brief excerpt from the book that we'll be talking about. In the foreword, the authors say about vaccine safety and the findings of this book, quote, "There are two possible answers to the central question in this book. If the answer is the one you'd expect, that vaccine authorities are right, you will just go on your week somewhat better informed. If, on the other hand, the answer is that parents are right, the earth beneath your feet may start to tremble. Thus, you are now standing on the verge of an intellectual adventure that has the potential to violently rock your world. Once you pass through the gate, there will be no going back. You won't be able to unknow what you already know. If you choose to continue reading, you will have to gather the courage required for the journey to the other side of reality. Courage to face new facts and examine them objectively. Courage to ask hard questions when you're expected to merely obey. And courage to stand your ground in the face of pressure from family, friends, doctors, government officials, and what will probably feel like everyone else. If you aren't brave enough to get through this book, you might want to put it down, at least for now. Give it to someone else who you think is ready for the challenge. Come back to it in the future when the time is right. If, however, you choose to accompany us on this journey, you might want to make yourself a cup of coffee, get a smartphone or tablet, and download the references document so you'll have it next to you, and get comfy before we embark on our odyssey to the godforsaken corners of the vaccine version of Alice in Wonderland, where nothing is quite as it seems," unquote. And here's the challenge issued by the authors to all doctors and scientists out there. They say, quote, "With that, I challenge every physician and scientist to read Turtles All the Way Down, Vaccine Science and Myth, and make your best effort to shoot holes in the arguments it makes. I suspect that for the vast majority, it will be an eye-opening experience. If you choose not to take the challenge because you don't have the guts, then you have no place in the vaccine debate. In other words, speak now or forever hold your peace," unquote. Oh-ho. Hopefully this episode and this book, Turtles All the Way Down, will be listened to and read in the coming years and decades ahead and will help parents make more honest, courageous, and healthy choices for their children. If a few base campers and maybe a few doctors buy the book and get the resources mentioned, I'll feel like we've done our part. We are fortunate to sit around the fire with one of the editors of this book. Enjoy the episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, base campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Zoe O'Toole. Zoe is a writer, a mother, and one of the editors of the book that is the talk of the town, a book titled Turtles All the Way Down. Here is my interview with Zoe O'Toole. Okay, I am here with Zoe O'Toole, writer and researcher, mother Zoe O'Toole. Welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, you know, I came across your name. I picked up the excellent book that you and Mary Holland edited called Turtles All the Way Down. We're going to be talking all about today. The subtitle is Vaccine Science and Myth. And what a great book. This is one that I think every parent and going to be parent and about to be a parent, and including doctors that want to really understand this important topic are going to want to read. I was just blown away by the book. You and Mary did a great job editing it.
Thank you.
It's anonymously written, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But let's just talk about, how did you come to edit this book? How'd you pick the great title, and why was the book written anonymously?
Okay. Well, the book, actually, my connection with the book has a little bit of an interesting history. I was editing the blog at Thinking Moms Revolution when I got this anonymous message that said, talk to me, I have a proposition for you. And it turned out to be one of the authors of the book. And at that point in time, they were hoping to do an English version at the same time. The book was originally written in Hebrew, and these authors are from Israel. Mm-hmm. So they were hoping to do an English version at the same time. But the English version was going to require more time than I had available at that point in time. So I reluctantly said that I couldn't do it. But I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of the most worthwhile projects seem to have this almost meant to be feeling about them.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
And so they published the book in 2019 in Hebrew. And Mary Holland went to a conference in Israel where she saw this book everywhere. And so she picked it up and she started looking through it. And she said, wow, this looks like a really serious book. So she wanted to talk to the authors. And she, through the grapevine somehow, she got put in touch with them. They are super anonymous, as we will discuss. And they said, yes, we'd love to do an English edition. So Mary started doing the editing of the English version and quickly ran out of time and energy for it because she was the president of Children's Health Defense. And that was just a full-time job. So she said, she talked to the authors and she said, listen, I've got this friend, Zoe O'Toole. She's a great editor. Would you be interested? And of course, they already knew who I was.
Right.
So so they said, sure, let's do it with her. So that's how that came about. And the title is interesting because a lot of people have said, I hate the title. It doesn't say vaccines to me. Mm-hmm. But if you read the book and you get the story behind the title, most people with a science background who understand where it came from end up thinking, yeah, that's kind of brilliant, actually.
It is.
And the reason is because the story that it comes from, it's this apocryphal story about this scientist giving a cosmology lecture. And in the process of his cosmology lecture, after the lecture, this older woman comes up to him and says, oh, you've got this great theory, but it's all wrong. What it really is that the world sits on the back of either a giant turtle or an elephant that sits on a giant turtle.
Mm-hmm.
And then the scientist says to the old woman, so what's underneath the turtle? And the woman says, oh, it's another turtle, of course. And then the scientist says, well, what's under that turtle? And the woman laughs and said, well, it's turtles all the way down.
Yeah.
And so the scientists, they love that story because it makes them out to be the rational, scientific, logical thinkers, while the superstitious older woman is the, you know, just mythological. Their thinking is based on magical thinking, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So when you read the book, you get the understanding that the parents, particularly mothers, we're talking about, because it's really that this movement has been much more mothers than fathers. That's just a fact.
Yep.
And so it's a lot of women who are told repeatedly that they're just being emotional. But if you look at the book and you see what their arguments are, you see that the science is actually on the side of the parents. And it's the health authorities, as they're called in the books, that are holding up these precepts that have nothing underneath them. There is no scientific backing. When you get all the way down, there's nothing there.
It's turtles all the way down.
Well, indeed.
Let me ask you, like, when you started editing, did you learn a lot from editing? Like, what did you learn? Did it simply strengthen your convictions that I don't know if I would recommend these? Did it completely have you do a 180 on anything as you edited the book? Like, I'm just kind of curious, did it change your perspectives? For me, when I was reading it, I mean, I was a little shocked at some of the things. I was like, what? Yeah, and we'll talk about some of the things I was shocked about, but I regret getting my own son some of the childhood vaccines because I feel like it may have impacted his development intellectually in a certain way. But he's healthy and thankful he doesn't have something like autism or something really bad. But also, when the COVID vaccines came out, I was a flat no, like no way. And he never got the teenage shots because I was already getting a little bit suspicious about the whole thing. I won't say that it changed my mind because I was already in that camp when I read the book, but there was some things that we'll talk about that I was like, what are you kidding me? So I guess I wanted to ask you, like, were you already in that camp? So you're like, or were you like, oh my God, this is really something that I did not anticipate reading in this book of these two Israeli scientists?
I think I don't know how many there are actually, how many scientists there are behind it. Yep. But that is a really great question, I think, because a lot of the people who do read the book are deeply shocked. They're shocked to their core at seeing what the science really is. However, by the time I was on this project, I had been doing this for a long time, and I had literally read hundreds of scientific studies on this topic. And there were very, very few surprises for me. So no, it did not really change anything about my approach to the topic.
Well, I was surprised. I think that most parents, you know, they're too busy to do a deep dive. And so, you know, I remember going to our ex pediatrician, no longer, obviously was not our pediatrician all the way through, and saying, if you don't go along with the vaccine schedule, then I'm not going to be your pediatrician. She kind of strong-armed us, and I wasn't so... I mentioned this in a previous conversation with you, that I wasn't so strong in my understanding of the whole thing. I hadn't been deep enough down the rabbit hole to really go, well, you're fired then, because I'm not doing this. At the time, I was a new father, and I was just kind of cross-eyed and like, I guess we got to go with her. Everybody's recommending this pediatrician.
I think we need to stop right there and say that attitude is a huge red flag. For anybody who's listening, if you hear somebody say it's my way or the highway, that is not how your doctor should approach things.
Right. Yeah. And I think most people, without investigating, think that the vaccine, they said they've tested them vigorously.
Yes.
So it must be true. They're not looking at white papers. They're not pouring over, you know, frontline doctors, you know, America, you know, they're not pouring over the counter arguments because they don't have time and the bandwidth. So I think most people just like, look, they say that it's, you know, I'm going to trust the science. That's what they always say. I'm going to trust the science. It's like, well, you're not being very scientifically minded right now by just going along with, you know, the schedule. And so my question after you edited this book, like, are they testing things properly, including the earlier vaccines? Forget the COVID one for a second. Are they testing any of them vigorously, such as why do they test them against a placebo? That would seem like that would be a really solid scientific way to test a new vaccine. A placebo.
That is a really solid scientific way.
But do they do that?
That should be the gold standard. And and technically is considered the gold standard is a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you will hear from people is that vaccines are so important and they save so many lives that it's not ethical to withhold a vaccine for a placebo-controlled trial. Now, that means what they'll do is that, say, they're testing a new MMR.
Mm-hmm.
What they'll do is they'll compare the control group will get the old MMR. Or in, they actually literally did this, the MMRV, which is the measles, mumps, rubella, and varicella, which is chickenpox, that's a 4-in-1 shot. That was compared to the MMR and varicella given at the same time.
Mm.
So this is not, this is what a control group usually is for a newer generation vaccine. For an older, newer generation of an older vaccine. For a completely new vaccine where there isn't any standard treatment, it should be done against a true placebo. There should be a randomized placebo-controlled trial where you see the both the efficacy and the safety profile most clearly when compared to a saline placebo control.
Mm-hmm.
But you do not see that in vaccine trials. Now, you don't see that in trials that happen today, but you never did see that in any of the vaccines that are on the schedule. And that's basically where the turtles all the way down came from, mm-hmm. because if you're comparing your current version of the DTaP, for instance, against the previous version, the DTP vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize that when those vaccines were originally licensed, they weren't even doing clinical trials, or the clinical trials they were doing were not controlled. There was no control group whatsoever. So they just looked at it and said, well, there's less pertussis in the kids who got vaccinated, so therefore it works, basically.
So let me see if I understand this right. So the true like gold standard would be taking a control stump, like just a placebo saline or whatever, and then that would give you numbers, and then the new variant of the vaccine, whether that's COVID or a new MMR, whatever they're putting out, that would give you a really accurate reading about what kind of adverse reactions and things are happening. But when they put it against the old one that's perhaps already shoddy and already has some adverse reactions.
Yes,
it looks like this one's good, or maybe it's got very minimal more than the old one, but the old one also wasn't tested against the saline, let's say, right?
Yes.
So you're not really getting a true reading.
Exactly. If you're going to get a true safety profile for any drug, you want to see how it stacks up against a placebo. So a placebo should be something that's biologically inactive.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can see, if you're using other vaccines, those are not biologically inactive. So they are having adverse effects of their own, side effects that happen because it is affecting your immune system, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you do this, you cannot see all, okay, how do I say this? When the idea of having a randomized placebo-controlled trial is to be able to have the group that was exposed to the new drug,
mm-hmm.
and you can compare all the things that happened to that group to all the things that happened to the control group. Now, the reason you use a placebo control is because it's not biologically active.
Right.
And so everything that happens in that group, you can pretty much chalk up to coincidence or randomness. So there's going to be a background incidence of fever.
Right.
for a background incidence of seizures, because mm-hmm. sometimes kids do just have seizures.
Right.
Or, you know, any particular condition, there's a background incidence. It may be super rare in the regular population, but there is a background incidence. So you want to be able to compare your new thing to
the randomized. Yeah, exactly.
The population you're testing. So that's why you need a control group. You can't just say, oh, well, in the general population, because you're testing a specific group of people. So in this case, you'd probably be testing a group of 6-month-old babies.
Yeah.
Something like that. So you need to be testing against 6-month-old babies. So that will give you a true safety profile as well as the true efficacy of the drug. Mm. Now, if you don't have that, you don't have a true safety profile. So what you find if you read chapter 1 of Turtles all the way down, you will see that we literally do not know the true safety profile of a single vaccine on the childhood schedule.
Wow.
Much less what happens when you put them all together.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that for a second there. So I've read a bunch of, I remember seeing something and I was never able to kind of confirm it. You probably know this quite well, but you know, I would see like, you know, like somebody would say, well, we used to get 3 vaccine doses, you know, if you're in your 50s or 60s or whatever, when we were children. Now they get, and I saw some astronomical number like 50 or 63 or something like that. And, you know, my son's 17. I'm like, well, he didn't get 63 shots. Like, did they sock it all into the 5 or 6 times that he got injected? Like, I was going to ask you, like, or was that just hyperbole? Somebody posted something on, you know, Twitter and I grabbed it. Like, what is the vaccine schedule for kids these days? How many doses do they get? And what does it do? Like, what does it do to their immune system? Do we know, you know, what these, you know, hyper-stimulating an immune system does to babies?
So there are two issues that you're talking about here.
Yeah.
And they are separate in a way. The first issue is you need to compare apples to apples. Mm-hmm. And do people do that all the time? No, they don't. So you're right to be suspicious, because when they're talking about these numbers and it's 3 versus 70, whatever, which is really the number that we're talking about, that's incorrect. And the reason that's incorrect is because, okay, let's start at the beginning. You are given the CDC immunization schedule has a number of shots on it, but it also has a number of vaccines that are combination shots. As you mentioned earlier, the MMR or the MMRV. The MMR has 3 doses of vaccine. Mm. And what that means is that when you get that one shot, your immune system is stimulated to react to 3 different kinds of antigens. So it's going to have 3 times the response than it would have to a monovalent, they call it, a singular vaccine. So it counts as 3 doses. Now, every time you have that vaccine, and the DTaP is probably the best example of this, because I believe there are 5 doses of that recommended on the schedule now. So that's 5 times the DTaP is the diphtheria, tetanus, and the acellular pertussis. So that's 3 doses. So you get 5 times, that's 15 doses right there.
Okay.
So that adds up fast, especially these days. So the schedule, the current schedule really is about 78 doses of vaccine by the time a child turns 18.
Wow.
So that is doses. That is not shots.
Right, right.
But it is doses. And if you see the comparison to the 3 doses in the past, that's incorrect because, and this is me being a stickler, but back in the 1980s, they did have several doses of the DTP recommended, and a lot of schools required all of those. So that would be 12 doses right there. Mm-hmm. Say you had 4 of those shots, three doses each. That's 12 doses. And then you add the three polio, which most people had to have. And, you know, you're starting to add up. It's mm-hmm. not the three that sometimes gets put out. And back, if you see the comparison to 1961, which happens to be when I was born, you'll see that they'll talk about it was only three. And that's a tricky comparison because we didn't have a CDC recommended schedule at that point in time. And the doctors who were doing the recommending, the American Academy of Pediatrics, they were recommending many doses of the vaccines even then, just mm-hmm. as they do now, but not any of the newer vaccines, just the older vaccines. So again, comparing it to three is not apples to apples. If you're comparing doses, you got to go with, you know, 12 to 15, probably at least in the 60s even.
Well, and why we're on the topic, it's in the book, I kind of smiled when I read it because I recognized something. The writer, the author said, basically, if it was all like the pharmaceutical companies and the vaccine companies insist that it's all safe and effective. That's all you hear. Trust the science. Trust the science. Yep. It's safe and effective, and it's safe and effective. The author points out, then why don't you behave like it's safe and effective? In other words, like you're basically blocking any counter argument. You won't be transparent. You're often trying to silence the doctors that are trying to find out if it is safe and effective.
Is this like, the behavior of someone who believes in what they're doing?
No. If it was truly safe and effective, you would say, hey, come and test it against a placebo, please. We want this to be safe for humans. But that's not the way they behave at all.
No, it's not. And this is something I've been telling people for a decade at least. Huh. Look at the behavior of the people you're talking to.
Yep.
You want to say who should you believe? Well, look at their behavior. Who's telling you? Yeah, go read that study. Come back to me and let's talk about it. And who's saying, oh no, you don't need to read that study. I've interpreted it for you, and that's just fine. You know, the minute somebody says no, you don't need to read that, you know they're trying to hide something from you.
Exactly. You know,
while
I want
parents are saying yes, go read the studies. We want you to go read them, inform yourself.
Yeah, especially, I think you're going to see a whole new generation of parents that are going to have Turtles All the Way Down, as well as Paul Thomas's book. We're going to talk about him in a second. My hope is the next generation of parents will be armed with the truth and things will maybe even change, you know, up above, you know, for the pharmaceutical companies, that their feet are held to the fire with a little bit more intensity than they are right now. But I wanted to talk about Dr. Paul Thomas because he really, I know you're either editing or co-authoring a new book of his, right?
Editing,
I first came across his work, his excellent work, and I remember a couple of shocking things about the book of his that I read. One, he was talking about when he was in medical school, he said, you know, people think that pediatricians do a deep dive into vaccine safety. And he basically said nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, they handle it in like a 1-hour lecture. They just say, basically they say, here's the CDC schedule. It's tested and proven. You don't need to worry about that. Just these are the shots you're going to give. And then they move right on to other things. He says it's given very little. There's no place to ask questions. And you're busy. And he said, you know, he was basically talking for pediatricians. He said a lot of them don't have the bandwidth to do a deep dive into vaccines and stuff because they're so busy with their practices. Yes. And he's like, I'm not trying to make, you know, broad excuses for pediatricians because we have to get this right. It's so important. And he told a story about he was starting to get, and I'll let you weigh on this when I'm done telling the story, but he was basically noticing some difference. He was a pediatrician in Portland, Oregon. And he was saying that he was noticing some changes as he was giving the vaccines. And he's like, I'm starting to notice this. And the capper was, there was a young boy who had been given a round of vaccines, and his distraught parents came back a couple days later or the next day. And he said, I looked in the waiting room and I saw him. And he goes, I just got this terrible feeling. I just got this like, okay, that's not right. And he looked like he was nonverbal. He looked like something really bad. And he goes, and that's really when I said, I can't. Basically, I mean, I'm paraphrasing all this. He's like, I've got to take responsibility for this. This is, you know, this is defying my oath. I don't know what's going on. Let me look at these. And as I think about it, I did not get, you know, well-versed on this in medical school. So let me start to dig. And that's my take on it. And I'll let you take, you know, maybe I had the story a little wrong, or that was my takeaway from his book.
Exact, but the idea is correct. So yeah. I've heard this story hundreds of times from so many parents, and it's because I listen, because I talk to them and I believe them when they tell me their story. And what you find is that most doctors are taught to dismiss parents' stories around this, even though, you know, historically they've been taught to listen to the patient, right? To listen to them, know what's going on, ask them what's going on.
Yep.
They have been taught to dismiss parents' observations and their concerns on this subject. Now, I give Paul, I mean, I love Paul for stuff, but I give Paul a tremendous amount of credit for actually doing the observing and listening to what was going on in that room. And that was the thing that changed the way he practiced medicine. He began to emphasize informed consent, and that put him at odds with the practice he was working with. And so he had to leave and start his own practice, which he was determined to honor informed consent and tell people that there were negative adverse reactions associated with vaccines. And once you start telling people that, oh yeah, this vaccine could hurt your child and quite possibly permanently, then people start to think about it a little differently. And they start to question it, and they start to do things more slowly. They're not going to jump right in and say yes. So he was finding that more and more of his patients' parents were saying, you know what, I'm gonna step back, and maybe I'll go slower, or maybe we'll skip these and I'll think about it. And the more and more that happened, the more he noticed that his kids were not as sick as the kids were in the general culture. And so again, he was observing, he was listening, and it changed his behavior. And that's exactly what we have to do with doctors. We're already doing it, I think, with parents. I think that's going to be the single biggest thing that will change the pediatric practice of medicine, when a good chunk of the parents say, no, I'm not doing that. Pediatricians have to change.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great perspective. Does he still does he still favor some of the vaccines compared to the others? Does he still say, hey, I still think this is a good idea for your son or your daughter?
You should ask.
Yeah, I'm very curious about that.
Yes, one of the big things that happened to Paul, that, again, I have mad respect for him for this, was that he, when he put out the vaccine-friendly plan, which is the first one that you read,
yep,
he was still recommending certain vaccines and thinking they were important for certain things. And the Oregon Medical Board told him, you need to prove that your plan is as safe as the CDC plan. So Paul took that as a challenge and said, all right, I'll do
game
that.
Game on, right?
Yeah. So he brought in a data person, and an independent data person, and that this person gathered all the data in his practice for the thousands of kids. And they narrowed it down to kids who were born in the practice and had, you know, basically been been under Paul's care their entire childhood up until whenever the data set was closed. And then he had the data analyzed with James Linesweiler, who is really good at designing studies in order to get a really good sense of what's going on. And they compared the number of office visits in two populations. The one population was the completely non-vaccinated children. These children had had zero vaccines. They were born into his practice and had zero vaccines. And there were a good chunk of them because people who didn't want to vaccinate came to his practice.
Right.
Because they were getting kicked out of pediatricians' offices like yours.
Yeah.
So he had this large group of unvaccinated children. Then he compared all the other kids who'd had any number of vaccines to those children. And they compared the relative number of office visits for a huge number of concerns, things like asthma, ear infections, ADHD, autism, speech delay, all kinds of things. And what they found was that the number of office visits, which is kind of a measure of the severity of a condition as mm-hmm. well, the number of office visits was much higher in the vaccinated kids for most of these conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Like several times higher. So this shook Paul to his core, because he did believe that kids should receive certain vaccines, that they were important, that, you know, that you should have some kind of schedule, and maybe you want to even complete the whole schedule eventually, you know. But when he saw this, he said, I'm hurting people by vaccinating them at all.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And it changed his thinking kind of dramatically.
I would think
so. So the book that he's about, it's, we sent it to the printer just this week. He is not advocating any vaccines.
Okay. I was wondering about that.
He is saying, you know, think about each one carefully, but I can't give you a good argument for any of them. The average child.
You know, what's funny, Zoe, is I've got a friend of mine. He's the oldest of four boys, and I was talking to him, and it's so funny. It's so opposite of the way that the culture thinks about vaccines. And he's like, my damn parents got me vaccinated before they woke up. He goes, my three brothers, none of them got a vaccine, and they're animals. They never get sick. Like, they've got the best of me. He goes, and I get sick. I have I got allergies. He goes, why did I have to, you know, it's so funny because he's kind of a twinkle in his eye a little bit. You know how siblings are, especially brothers, you know, it's like you know, mom and dad love them more. You save them from this poison I got, you know? But he's like, no, they never get sick. These guys are absolute animals. They're just like, they're just so strong but I wanted, you know, to me, it always, I was always suspicious. Once I started to wake up, I was always suspicious of all this autism and all the ADHD. I think to me, it was, you know, when people are like, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. There's so many factors in autism. It could be, you know, genetics. It could be the
There are a lot of factors.
Yeah, yeah. But I was always super suspicious of the vaccine schedule for autism.
Yeah, and you should be.
Yeah.
Because though there are a lot of factors, what is the one thing that almost every kid gets that has just exploded in number in the decades that the autism has gone up?
Yeah.
And so also what you find is that autism is strongly correlated with immune dysregulations.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of allergies. There are lots of autoimmune conditions in the population of people who have autism. So right there, that's a little clue. Mm-hmm. You know, their immune systems are dysregulated. And so what you're doing is when you're repeatedly hyperstimulating the immune system, you're interrupting the actual development of the immune system the way it's supposed to go. But you're not just interrupting the development of the immune system, because the immune system is tied to your digestive system. It's tied to your endocrine system. It's tied to your neurological system. All of these things are going to be affected when you're constantly hyperstimulating the immune system.
That's a great point. That's a great point. You know, I didn't think about it that way, but it's obvious the way you say that. It's like, of course, that's
right.
Yeah, it is.
If you look at, there's a chart that I'm not sure who put it together in the first place. It might have been the vaccinepapers.org website that doesn't exist anymore, but it's beautiful. It's this beautiful color-coded chart of when the brain is most quickly developing. Like it shows rapid phases of brain development. And you look at that graph superimposed with the vaccine schedule, and it's terrifying, because you're just constantly overwhelming the system and preventing it from doing the development it's supposed to be doing.
I mean, I feel like I dodged a bullet. I spoke with you off microphone earlier a couple days ago, and saying that, you know, I feel like probably my son was impacted. I think, but in a way that he still can be a very highly functioning adult, you know.
Yep.
And you can't tell, like, looks like a normal 17-year-old, but I think right now, the way that I view a normal 17-year-old is slightly vaccine injured, right?
Yes.
Like they've all, you know, unless you,
I agree with you there.
Unless you woke up and they all have ADHD. And I don't think,
yes,
to be fair,
that's a thing.
Yeah.
Because there are some things that you can look at that have to make you think, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the things that people are finding, if you talk to parents, is that their children don't want to learn to drive, or they're having terrible difficulty learning to drive.
Mm-hmm.
Now that driving, learning to drive was a rite of passage. Everybody wanted to jump in the car and take off and do something fun, right?
Yep. Yep.
That is not the case anymore. And I think that is not the case because these kids are A, more anxious, and B, more distracted. And you can put that down to screens.
Yeah.
To some extent. But to some extent, I guarantee you that hypervaccination is behind it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then tell us about, you're involved with a group called Thinking Moms Revolution. Can you tell us what kind of work you're doing? What kind of group is that? And what's your place in that group? And what are you doing?
Yeah. Thinking Moms Revolution is defunct at this point.
Oh,
and
okay.
Now I'm working with Children's Health Defense as their publishing coordinator. We have an imprint with Skyhorse where we put out books that are related to these kinds of topics. So that's what I'm doing now. But I started out with Thinking Moms Revolution, and it was kind of unique. It was a group of friends who were all dealing with kids who had special needs. 22 of the 24 parents had kids with autism. And we were just, first off, we needed friends, right? Everybody was in the trenches and we needed friends to talk about this stuff with. And we also would bounce ideas off of each other and say, okay, well, I've seen this before. What did somebody else do about it, and what did they see, and how did that work? Mm-hmm. And so we found that we had just this super valuable forum for us to share these ideas and create friendship. And so one of our members, Helen Conroy, who is a powerhouse, said, let's write a book. And so we all wrote a chapter of a book telling our stories, and you started to see patterns when you saw it all down on paper.
Sure.
And one of the interesting things was I was one of the people who did not have a child with autism. My kids had ADHD and a learning disability or two. Mm-hmm. So I used to call that the infrared portion of the autism spectrum. But one of the things that was different about my kids, and particularly my son, was that I didn't vaccinate them. And the other kids had very, very similar health records to my children, other than the vaccination. And to a person, they were much worse off.
Mm-hmm.
Much worse off. So that was a huge clue to me. And it was back in 2011, 2012, when we published the book and started our website. And so I just started writing and editing everything that came our way on this subject. And that's how I got to talking to people and listening to people and finding out what was going on and hopefully helping them to change things for the better.
Absolutely.
Well, so that's why I'm now with Children's Health Defense too.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, my heart goes out to parents when they're finding out this information and their son or daughter has autism. You know, it would be tough. It would be a daily self-forgiveness exercise because I would feel so guilty because I do already feel kind of bad about that whole situation because I feel like, you know, I didn't optimize his development by doing that, but I did the best I could. And as all the parents do, it's such an important topic to get the essential information after you've already acted or been strong-armed by a pediatrician that's kind of saying, hey, I do have a great reputation. If you want to work with me, you got to do it my way. That's really unfortunate. And my heart just goes out to parents. And before I ask you about different resources, where can people find you? When is the new Paul Thomas book coming out? Where can we find that? Where can we find you and the work you're doing?
You can always find me at Children's Health Defense, and you can also find me at my website, which is how you got to me, zoeotool.com.
Yep.
Currently, the Thinking Moms Revolution website is down, but that's also a good resource when it's not down. Paul's book, like I said, we just sent it to the printer, and I'm not sure their exact timeline, but I would think it's going to be available. It won't be officially in bookstores probably until the winter.
Okay.
But I think it will be available through their website. They've got a website called Kids First Forever. Now, I think it's Kids, K-I-D-S, First, F-I-R-S-T, four is the number four.
Yeah.
And I think ever is the word ever, EVER.com.
Beautiful. We'll double check it. Zoe, thanks so much for coming on Basecamp Freedom. It was just so great to chat with you. I'm grateful that you made time. You're just a wealth of insight about this topic. Come back anytime. Maybe after Paul's book comes out, you and I can chat a little bit. There'll probably be some moving pieces, and we can just kind of talk about where things are and what you're finding and what you're up to then. But thank you so much for coming on today. Really appreciate it.
You are very welcome.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. One thing that Zoe and I talked about after we stopped recording is she had mentioned Big Tech's role in keeping this information out of parents' hands. Back in the early days of Google and Facebook, you could find this kind of truth and counter-argument right away in a basic search of, say, vaccine safety. Not anymore. Google, Facebook, Twitter, and the rest of the Silicon Valley titans have committed to protecting Big Pharma over the safety of children. Think about that for a second. Dr. Paul Thomas's books are the ones we mentioned, and they are terrific for parents. His book, Vaccine Friendly Plan, is a classic. He's got another one coming out in the fall that Zoe's editing. I can't wait for that. That's going to be even more up to date. His name again, Dr. Paul Thomas, and his books are available on Amazon. I will finish with the last couple of paragraphs from Turtles All the Way Down. The authors say, quote, science belongs to the people. It belongs to humanity, not to corrupt government agencies and pharmaceutical giants who collude to rewrite the principles of science in order to continue the decades-long cover-up of their crimes against humanity. The magnitude of these crimes is enormous. These entities are in way too deep to ever be able to admit any wrongdoing. They will do whatever is necessary to protect the great vaccine hoax. For them, it is a matter of life and death, literally. and so it is for us, unquote. Thank you, base campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Base Camp for Men.